Yeah, so good. Any fans of The Clash in here? Yeah. I remember growing up, I thought that I was like super into punk rock. And then I walked in one day and my dad was listening to that album. And I was like, Dad, what is this? And he was like, son, he said something along these lines. Son, very dad statement. I was into punk rock before you were even born. And I was like, okay, cool. Hey, guys, real quick, I want to give a quick announcement. Clear something up first, though. Skimmed almond milk, Stephen? I mean, really? I drink my coffee black like a man, so next time around, you'll get it right. Hey, one thing I want to throw out there about Stephen, though, real quick. Man, he has just been phenomenal through this year of his internship. Yeah, yeah, give it up for Stephen. Everything that we have thrown at him, he has taken on and tackled, and including the latest of leading our guest services area. Stephen has done such a great job that he has worked himself into a job here. So he's going to be sticking around with us beyond his internship. So yeah, be sure to give him a high five, a hug, or whatever that looks like. So hey, today though, here's what I want to talk about. I love getting to teach, love getting to hang with you guys this morning, but I've got a question I want to start out with. Have you ever had to do something that you didn't want to do? Oh, that's a rhetorical question, right? Because the answer to that question is absolutely yes, but I mean like something you really didn't want to do. So for me, it's going to the dentist. And I don't know what it is, but it's always freaked me out. And as a kid, I had a dentist that like shamed me and told me not to eat candy and all the other good stuff that like as a kid, you're like, why would I not do that? So that might have something to do with it, but even today, going to the dentist sounds like one of the worst ways that I could spend like a few hours or an afternoon. It's not like my idea of a vacation or anything. So as a result, I ended up putting off getting out my wisdom teeth literally 4 years. And then things started to get so bad, probably about 5 years ago or so, I had to make it happen. And then after I got my wisdom teeth out, my wife was kind enough to get some footage of me waking up after the surgery. And I'm going to share that with you today. Let's check this out.
What?
What happened?
You had to get your teeth out. Here, turn this way. Scoot that way. You feel okay?
That hurt.
You hurt? Does your mouth hurt?
Uh-huh.
Do you know why?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what you're saying, so just be quiet for a minute, okay?
No, that's a bad idea. That's a bad idea.
Do you still see the clown?
You talking about Mickey the Clown?
Mickey the Clown, he's
I
here.
I don't know who Mickey the Clown is. Oh. Alright.
So,
They're your teeth that they pulled out.
That's why I'm at the dentist.
Yeah, that is why you're at the dentist. I'm gonna go get the car, okay? And they're gonna bring you down.
I'm out first.
I know. I'm gonna leave for just a minute, okay?
You can hang out with me.
Okay.
Okay? And I'll bring you down.
Okay.
Sound like a plan?
Yeah.
I love you.
I want.
Can I have your teeth back?
I want.
Okay, I'll give them to you when we get home. Okay? Okay? See you soon.
I thought we were getting cash.
Why'd you say a bad word earlier?
But I wanted to. What did
you say you did today?
I read Revelation.
You read Revelation?
It took me over to the Lamb and the Word of our testimony.
Yeah.
And we don't have to be afraid of dying. We don't shrink back from death.
That's true.
That made me feel better before my surgery.
That's good. God is pretty cool.
I got my wisdom teeth on today.
You did?
I supposed to do it a long time ago.
Yep.
Yeah.
You still look pretty cute though.
My hat's all crooked.
Do you remember anything you said after your surgery?
What did I say?
You asked me if I had something.
Oh, yeah. Is there anybody else in there?
Do you remember asking me that?
Is there anybody else in there?
No. Are you kind of coming back to you now?
I feel better.
You feel better?
I still hurt, though.
So you can thank Ashley for that later. What Ashley was asking me at the end got cut from the footage because I honestly probably would get fired from this church if you guys got to hear that. It was just wildly inappropriate, though. I also had a bag, I don't know if you caught this, with my teeth in it because I said that I wanted to keep them and make a trophy out of them. I don't know what was up with that. And apparently Ashley said I said a bad word. It was the F-bomb. I'll be completely honest with you. And then I was talking about the book of Revelation there like a crazy man as well. And then I have not noticed like what I was saying at the beginning when Ashley's like, just be quiet, like, I don't know what you're saying. I finally picked it up listening to it today. I said, I wish we were making out after my wisdom tooth surgery. Like literally standing here, I finally heard what I said. So here's the thing with this video. It was 10 years in the making. Back in college, they told me to get my wisdom teeth out, but I didn't want to. So like 5 years later, I started having some major issues with my back molars, and it was my wisdom teeth that were causing it. And they were like, yeah, you should get those out. But I put it off just a little bit longer, and I didn't do anything about it. But then I started getting this like really bad pain, like wake me up in the middle of the night pain. And I was like, man, I should absolutely get my wisdom teeth out now. So as a result, I learned a couple lessons of that. The first thing is just get your wisdom teeth out when they tell you to. That's just good advice to start with. The second is, no matter how much someone tells you that they love you, do not trust them with a camera when you wake up from surgery. It just doesn't go well, right? But if I'm being really honest, the real reason that I didn't want to get my wisdom teeth out, and the reason I still don't like going to the dentist today, is because I'm afraid. It's fear. That sounds silly, right? But I think that we could all say that we've been there. Because fear is a normal human emotion, right? It's a normal human emotion that we all deal with. So let me set this up just a little bit. Because we've been in the middle of this series called Antihero, where we've been looking at the idea that in our weakest moments, that's where Jesus actually does his best work. In fact, as a church, we've given this idea that we're a room full, we're a church full of anti-heroes. We're broken, messed up people that Jesus chooses to work in and through. And so if you missed the last couple weeks, let me catch us up. In week one, we looked at the story of Moses, and we looked at how we can stop playing the role of hero. We don't have to try to go it alone anymore. In fact, this was the principle that Ben taught us. We don't have to go it alone because God goes with us. And then week two, we looked at the story of Jacob. This was last week. And Ben challenged us to just take off the mask, to come out of hiding, to stop trying to pretend, because God actually blesses our mess, not our mask. He's deeply in love with the real you. And the thing that we're going to find in common with Moses' story and Jacob's story, what we find in common with all anti-heroes and us here today is this. We all have to deal with and live with fear. So let me ask a question real quick of you. What are you afraid of? Like if you think about it, what are you afraid of? Maybe it's a fear of like spiders or snakes or bugs or heights. Or maybe it's this. Maybe it's a fear that the Broncos will never have a legit quarterback again. Real fear, right? Well, if you're like me, it goes a little deeper than that though. Maybe it's the fear of like what's going to happen with your marriage, or it's fear around your finances, or it's fear with your addiction or your job. Maybe it's a fear that life is never going to be the same on the other side of whatever it is that you're facing right now. Like fear, though, it's just a normal emotion. We all have it, and I think in a lot of ways we try to categorize it as a bad emotion, but it's not a bad emotion. In fact, emotions, they're neither good nor bad. They just are. And God designed us to have every emotion that we feel, including fear. However, what can absolutely define our lives when we face emotions like fear is this. How we react to those emotions can define our lives, right? So when it comes to fear, we have a couple of options. And this is how it typically plays out for me. See if these options resonate with you. When faced with fear, we can either turn to control, that's unhealthy, or we can step into courage, And that's a healthy response to fear. So here's some ways that this might be able to play out for you. Just see if any of these hit home. You know, fear can lead us to trust our spouse and their intentions. And in the best scenario, that's courage. Or it can lead us to be controlling and manipulative, which in itself is control, right? Fear can lead us to seek help with our addiction. That's courage. Or it can leave us in a spot where we keep on saying, hey, I've got this. I don't need anybody else. That's control. Fear can lead us to actually parent our kids and point them towards grace and truth in some of the toughest situations. That's courage. Or fear can lead us to a place where we say, man, kids will be kids, and we just kind of turn a blind eye. And that doesn't seem like control, but it actually is a sense of control because it's passivity, it's running away, and that gives us a feeling that we're in control. And that list could go on and on though, right? So today, here's what we're going to take a look at. It's a story of a guy named Jonah. You can find his story in the Old Testament, and even if you've never read the Bible before, my guess is you've probably heard at least a little bit about his story because he's the dude who got swallowed alive by a fish and lived to talk about it. And we're going to get to that part here in a minute. But what I want to kind of set up for us is that throughout Jonah's story, when we see him faced with fear, what happens is Jonah's going to attempt to take control of his situation. And then about halfway through the story, he's going to shift into courage. But at the end of the day, Jonah still doesn't get it right. And that actually gives me a lot of hope. So here's what God's going to do. He's going to step into Jonah's life, and he's going to ask Jonah to do something that he really doesn't want to do. And this is going to be up here on the slide, so you can just kind of follow along with me. Jonah chapter 1, verse 1 starts this way. It says, the word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai. It says, God told him, go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me. Now, before we continue on, I want to give a little context around Jonah and the Ninevites and understand who they are. Jonah is a religious dude. Like, he knows all the rules. He says the right things. He dresses the right way. He basically, like, it's the equivalent of growing up in church. And he's also a prophet, which means that God spoke directly to Jonah. And it was Jonah's responsibility to go tell people what God was saying. So think about that for just a second. Like, God had a conversation with Jonah, and Jonah actually heard him speak. It was like, Jonah, yes, God, I'm here. Like, they had that type of relationship where they actually heard things. And I've never had that happen in my life. But what I think is super interesting about Jonah's story is even though he had that type of relationship with God, Jonah still struggled to trust and obey God, as we're going to find out. But here's what God wanted to do through Jonah. He wanted to give Nineveh another chance. He wanted to give him a chance to change, and he wanted to use Jonah to go do it. And here's why God wanted to do that, because Nineveh, it was a large city in a country called Assyria. It's believed to be maybe one of the largest metro areas in the world at the time. But the thing about Assyria is that they weren't just a country. They were an empire who was out to conquer the world. In fact, they were enemies of Jonah and Israel, and there had been some tension and conflict between their two countries for a while, and it was getting more and more tense. In fact, there was a prophecy in another part of the Old Testament that talked about that one day the Assyrians would come and they would conquer Israel. So not only were the Assyrians powerful, but they were cruel and they were brutal. Their kings would brag about things like this. They would brag about cutting off the heads of their enemies and putting them on stakes as an example, like to their enemies. Or they would take heads and they would stack them in a pyramid in front of conquered cities. Or they would cut off the skin of enemy soldiers and they would hang it from the walls of the cities as a warning. And that's just a few examples. So what Jonah does next, with that context in mind, absolutely makes sense to me. Verse 3 says this, but Jonah ran away from the Lord and he headed for Tarshish. That's just a fun, weird word to say. He went down to Joppa where he found a ship bound for that port. And after paying the fare, he went aboard and he sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. So Jonah basically hears God say, hey, go to Nineveh. And he says, no thanks, I think I'll go the opposite direction. I'll go to Tarshish instead. And we've got a map to kind of show you where these things are. So there's Assyria, and Nineveh's kind of all the way out here to the east. And then there's Israel, and then there's the Mediterranean Sea. And opposite direction of Israel, where Jonah lived, and opposite direction of Nineveh is Tarshish that doesn't even fit on the map. Jonah basically goes, I'm going the opposite direction of wherever God's telling me to go. I'm going to Tarshish, which is believed to be in modern-day Spain. Now, every time I've heard this taught, I've heard that Jonah was just disobedient to God, that he just didn't want to listen to God. And that's true, but I think there's actually a solid reason behind Jonah's disobedience, and I think it's one that you and I can resonate with on a deeper level. I think Jonah was afraid to go to Nineveh. Remember, they cut off heads, and they skinned their enemies, and they've been at war with Israel, and maybe Jonah's even had the Assyrians, like, kill loved ones of his or friends or neighbors. I mean, if you think about it in that context, wouldn't you be afraid too? And out of fear, what Jonah does is he chooses to take the situation into his own hands. He chooses control. In fact, the way that the original Hebrew writing kind of goes here, it implies that Jonah didn't just buy a ticket on a ship to Tarshish. He actually paid to take over the entire ship. He wanted absolute control. But the control that Jonah wanted, he didn't actually have it. Because fear tricks us into thinking that we have a false sense of control. And what we're going to find out is that running from God and thinking we're in control, it actually leads us to a place where we find out that we were never in control to begin with. Verse 4. Then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. And all the sailors, they were afraid, and they cried out to each other, or they cried out each to his own God. And they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. So it turns out that Jonah, he didn't have any control of the situation, did he? And isn't that what fear does to us? Like it blinds us. And it tricks us into believing that, like, we actually have control. And in Jonah's case, fear looked like this. It looked like running away and believing that he could actually run from God. Now, I don't know about you, but every time I try to take control of a situation, especially in the face of fear, I find out really quickly that I don't really have control. And it leads me right into the middle of a situation that feels like a storm. So let me tell you how this has played out in my life. Some of you have heard this story before, but let me share a few things with you. Back in high school, in fear that I was missing out or that I wasn't enough, I started sleeping with my girlfriend. I took control, and I ran hard from God. And it went so far that in my senior year, my girlfriend sent me to buy a pregnancy test for her. It turns out that she wasn't pregnant, but I'd played out every scenario of how I would get control of it, and you could probably imagine what that is. You know what that felt like to an 18-year-old kid? A storm, and I had no control. And then when my wife and I got married, you've heard this part of my story before, but I was terrified of having kids, and I think a lot of it was because of what happened back in high school. And so I took control again, and I said, no, we're not having kids, or we're not having them yet, at least. It's my life. It's our life. They're going to mess it up. And they kind of do. But then it led to some of the biggest fights that we've ever had in our marriage. Another storm. And then throughout my work life, and most of it's been in ministry as a pastor, I consistently battle feeling like I'm not enough. Like I'm not good enough, or I'm not qualified, or I'm not the right person to do what God's asking me to do. And that even plays out a little bit in what I'm doing here today with you. And my response is kind of like Jonah. I go, I'm going to do this my way. And so I start acting like I'm enough, and I start making sure that my point is heard in meetings, and I start making sure that everyone knows that I am enough. I take control. And to me, internally, the result is overwhelming. It feels like a storm, and I'm sure it does to the people around me too. And then at home, especially with young kids, life just feels out of control sometimes. And if you have young kids, you know exactly what I'm talking about. This was yesterday, by the way, at our house. So I try to white knuckle it when it's out of control, and I try to make sure that my kids know that I'm the authority. And in conflicts with Ash, I can just get angry and yell. Why? Because I need to control the outcome of the situation. And you know what it feels like in my house sometimes? A storm. Does any of that sound familiar for you? See, fear tricks us into believing the lie that we actually have control. And that's typically when the storm hits. But for Jonah, what we're going to find out about his story is that that's actually the best possible thing that could happen. Because it's the one thing that leads him to realizing he's not in control. So in the middle of this storm, back on the ship on the Mediterranean Sea going to Tarshish, as you can imagine, everyone is like freaking out, except Jonah. Jonah's actually in the bottom of the ship asleep, which is interesting because all the other sailors, they're praying. They're praying for their lives, and they're asking their version of God, hey, just save us, help us. But Jonah's indifferent to everybody else's situation except his own. And he's definitely not praying to the one God who could help. So all the sailors, they found out that Jonah's running from God, and they do the math, they put two and two together, and they realize that the reason for the storm might actually be Jonah. And so they go to him, they wake him up, and they're like, what have you done? And so Jonah tells them, and he says, you know what, just throw me in the ocean. I think in Jonah's mind at this point, he's going like, you're better off without me, and I'm better off dead. And a crazy thing happened, because as soon as Jonah hit the water, the storm just stopped. It was done. And it actually led the sailors on that ship to believe God, like the one true God, and trust him. So meanwhile, Jonah, he's got something even crazier happening because he's sinking to the bottom of the ocean to where he thinks he's just going to be dead. He's sure it's going to be his death. And then verse 17 happens. It says, the Lord provided a huge fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish for 3 days and three nights. Now, pause for a second, because I know that some of us, we just checked out right there on that one, right? I mean, a fish eating a man and he stayed alive? Like, that's one of the reasons that we don't believe the Bible is true. And that's okay. Like, there's a lot of things in the Bible that can be hard to get your head around. And I don't have time to get into today why I think this could be a true story, but I want to ask you just to hang on and go with me for a minute. Because even if you don't believe that a fish could eat a man and he could stay alive for 3 days and three nights, the point of this story is still the same, whether you believe that's literal or not. And the point is this, that when Jonah was faced with the fear of going to Nineveh, and when he tried to take control, it actually led Jonah to a place where he had no control. And it was in that place, in the belly of a fish, that Jonah was actually able to step into something different. He's able to step into courage. When he was completely broken and when he had lost all control, that's where Jonah actually gained courage. I mean, isn't that how life just seems to work sometimes? I mean, think about it. Aren't some of the most courageous people that you've ever met, people who have either let go of control or life has happened to them in a way that they've lost all control? I mean, maybe it's somebody you know that has made the choice to overcome an addiction. Or maybe it's somebody you know that was different on the other side of a diagnosis. Or maybe somebody who gained courage as they walked through a difficult season of marriage or lost a job. But here's the thing, when facing fear, like letting go of control, or in Jonah's case and sometimes ours, losing control, that actually leads to courage. And here's why I think that is. Because the difference between control and courage, the difference between control and courage is grace. It's grace. Now, grace is the Bible word. It's something external, like you can't get it from yourself and you certainly cannot control it. It comes from God. And this is what grace means. It means being given what you need, not what you deserve. And then grace goes on to give you the power to live a changed life. And in facing fear, the difference between control and courage, it's grace. And so what we get a glimpse of in Jonah's life is that he's starting to experience this grace. And he's starting to step into courage. Because it was at Jonah's lowest point where he had lost all control that he was able to experience God's grace. And here's what God did. He provided a fish for Jonah, and he didn't die. I mean, that's God giving Jonah what he needed, not what he deserved. And he gave him the power to let go of control. So then what we see Jonah do in chapter 2 is he starts praying this awesome prayer that I think you should definitely go read, but this is a prayer of courage. Like if you're in a season of life where you feel like that you're facing fear, that you don't know how it's going to play out, or if you feel like you're clinging to control and things are just flying off the rails out of control, or if you feel like you're right in the middle of a storm, chapter 2, this prayer was written for you. So go check it out this week if you get a chance. But what we find for Jonah and what we find in our lives is that as we lose or let go of control, we actually get to experience God's grace for us. And it's from that place that we can actually begin to step into courage. And that's what Jonah does. The fish spit him out. I'd pay money to see a replay of that, right? Like, that's just crazy. Then the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time, and God told him, hey, go to the great city of Nineveh and proclaim to it the message that I give you. And Jonah obeyed the word of the Lord, and he went to Nineveh. And here's the message that God gave Jonah to speak. 40 more days and Nineveh will be overthrown. That's real encouraging, right? And let's be honest here. That took some real, like, I'm trying to think of the right word, cojones. I mean, this is Nineveh. They skin their enemies and they cut off their heads and play Tetris with them. And if I were Jonah, I would at least sugarcoat this message a little bit. Like, I'd take back control of the situation. But Jonah, he spent 3 days in the belly of a fish. He's hit rock bottom. He's seen what it's like to not have control. And so he's experiencing grace. He's gotten what he needed from God, not what he deserved. And he's stepping into the power that comes from grace, and he's stepping into courage. Now, you can read the whole story for yourself in Jonah chapter 3, but what happens next is just crazy to me, blows my mind. Verse 5 says, the Ninevites believed who? Jonah? No. What's it say? They believed who? God. They believe God. As a result of Jonah letting go of control and stepping into courage and just speaking the message that God gave him. Now, again, this is God's grace showing up all over this story. And this grace is not just for Jonah now. It's for the Ninevites too. Because God's a God of second chances and third chances and hundredth chances. And it's hard for all people at all times to experience his grace. It would have been super easy for Jonah to take back control of the situation and just change the message, right? And it would have been really, really easy for the Ninevites just to do what they always do and take control and just kill Jonah. But they didn't. Because in this story, grace paved the way. Grace paved the way from control to courage, both for Jonah and for Nineveh. Now, this is the point in the story where I wish there was a nice bow on it, and it just ended right here. I wish it just said, they all lived happily ever after, the end. But it doesn't. And here's what we're going to find out for Jonah. In chapter 4, if you go read it, Jonah moves right back into his same old ways. He wants control of his own life and situation, and we get the idea that even though he had stepped into courage, maybe he was never really on board with the plan that God had for him and for Nineveh to begin with. And so he goes outside the city, and he starts throwing a little temper tantrum like my 3 and 4-year-old do in Walmart when they don't get the toy that they want. And he sits down on the ground, and he's like, hey, God, I knew that you would give them grace. I knew you'd show them compassion. I mean, like, how nuts is that? It gets even deeper. Jonah goes, I think I'd rather just die than see those people be saved. Even still, God is showing Jonah grace in this part of the story because he plants a plant, and he provides shade for Jonah. And again, he's shown him that God has the same compassion on him, on Jonah, that he has on Nineveh, because God's grace is for all people at all times. And for Nineveh, what we understand, like through history, is that letting go of control for them, it was only temporary. Because just 37 years later, they were back to their same old violent ways. They had actually invaded Israel, and they ended up destroying and conquering the northern kingdom of Israel. Now, as crazy as this sounds and as weird as it sounds, the way this story ends, without a bow on it, it actually gives me a lot of hope. And here's why. because it sounds an awful lot like my life. Whenever I face fear, I try to take control. And typically I end up losing control. Sometimes I make the choice to let go of control, and God gives me grace. And that's when I actually begin to step into courage, but that doesn't last long because I quickly fall back into the cycle of control all over again. Does that sound like anybody else? Yeah, me too. Here's the other thing that I love about Jonah's story and the way that it ends. A lot of people believe Jonah might have been the author of this book of the Bible, which means if that's true, he chose to end his own story as the anti-hero. He chose to point out his own weakness and God's strength. He chose to make God the hero of the story. And you know what that takes? It takes courage. And that only happens by God's grace. In fact, if we were to take that a step further, 830 years later, Jesus would point back to Jonah's story as a prediction of his own story in Matthew chapter 12. Jesus, he compared his own death and burial and resurrection to bring grace to the world to Jonah's lowest moment in the belly of the fish. But think about this. The moment that Jonah chose to run away from God, the moment of his greatest fear, and the moment where Jonah said, I'm in control and God, I don't want anything to do with what you're trying to do in my life. That's the story Jesus chose to explain how he would bring grace to the world. It's pretty cool, huh? So here's the question that we're left with. This is where I want to land us today. What does it look like to live from courage instead of control? What does it look like in our lives to face fear and, like, through grace to step into courage? I was talking this week with Ben, our teaching pastor, and this week he pointed out that we can tend to move into a few different forms of control. Control can play itself out a few different ways. See if any of this connects with you. On one hand, when we're faced with fear, we can over-control. And we see this play out all over Jonah's story. It's what I typically see play out in my own life, but we begin manipulating people and situations in order to control the fear, right? And we decide that we can do this our own way and on our own terms. That's one way, over control. To the opposite extreme, we can decide that things are out of control. We can think a situation is entirely out of control, and so we begin shutting down, and we're overwhelmed. And this is actually what happened at the end of Jonah's story, because the outcome of Nineveh was completely out of Jonah's control. So he said, I'd be better off dead. But there's actually a third option. And this third option is really good news. It's under control. And this is what we should do with fear when we live in the kingdom of God. We don't over-control a situation, and we don't trick ourselves into thinking that it's out of control. Instead, we hold on. We cling to the promise that God has this under control. God has this under control. And he will take care of us by his grace. And through grace, we can actually step into courage. So here's what this looks like practically. I heard a quote this week that I think it's really good, and it's just true. It goes like this. Courage takes practice. Courage takes practice. That's good, isn't it? It takes practice believing that God actually has our fear under control. It's not easy, right? Because if you're like me, it feels natural to try to over-control things. And so often in life, it just feels out of control. It takes practice believing that God has it under control. And when our fear is under God's control, that's when we can step into courage. So this week, I want to challenge us to take some steps together, if you're up for it, to apply this. I want to challenge us to practice courage. And here's some questions to help get you started. You could take some pictures of this, or you could write down these questions or whatever's helpful to you if you want to apply it this week. The first one's this. What are you afraid of? Where's an area in your life that you're being asked to do something that you don't want to do? Where are you afraid of how the outcome of something might go? Or if that one doesn't connect, how about this? Where are you over-controlling? Or where does life feel out of control? I mean, where are you just white-knuckling it, trying to keep everything on the rails? Or where is it flying off the rails and you're just ready to give up? So if we're being honest, we all have those areas. And here's the application. Take that area of your life and say to God, hey, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense in my marriage. It doesn't make sense with my kids. It doesn't make sense financially. It doesn't make sense with my addiction. It doesn't make sense in this relationship. God, it just doesn't make sense, but I trust you. I'm going to trust that you have it under control. And then here's the hard part. Act on whatever he tells you to do next. That's courage. And it doesn't happen by accident. Because that kind of courage, that takes practice. So I want to ask you, will you stand with me? So here's the reality. We're in a room full of anti-heroes. We're people who face fear every single day of our lives. And for some of us, this hit a little too close to home and you're not sure if you want to touch it because you're trying to over-control everything in your life right now. And to others of us, it just feels like life is out of control. But to every single one of us, God gives us this promise. He gives us grace. And he says, I have this under control. And by letting go of control, as anti-heroes, we get to practice courage. And we don't do this perfectly, but we follow the one who did. That's Jesus. He's gone before us, and he was faced with death to bring grace to the world. And in that moment, he felt fear too. In the garden before Jesus went to the cross, he even prayed, hey, God, if there's any other way, like, please, just take this away from me. See, even Jesus was tempted with a sense to take control of the situation. But instead, he chose to give us a perfect example of what courage looks like. Because his next words were, hey, Father, not my will, but your will be done. And saying that, Jesus is going, hey, I trust you, God, that you have this under control. And then he showed the greatest act of courage this world has ever seen. Because he willingly went to the cross, one of the most brutal deaths we could ever imagine. He stretched out his arms, and he died. But it didn't end there. Because Jesus came back to life. And if a dead man comes back to life and claims that he's got your situation under control, it's a pretty sure bet to place. I'm going with that. Look, we're anti-heroes. But we have the opportunity to follow our hero, Jesus. We don't have to do it perfectly. We don't have to have it right all the time. But as we follow Jesus, it's an action opportunity for us to step in and to practice courage. Let's pray. God, you're good. And I thank you, Jesus, that no matter what it is that we're facing in life, even when we think that we have to have it under control, the reality is, we really don't, like Jonah's story goes. And in reality, Jesus, whether we want to give up control to you or not, like, you still have control. You accomplish what you want to, whether we want to be on board or not. And God, you still give us grace. Father, I'm also a little uncomfortable that every time that I teach something, whatever's going on that I'm teaching, like, it's happening in my life too. And so, Father, I'm praying for me today, and I'm praying for every person standing in here, that God, you would give us the ability to identify what the fear is in our life, that you would allow us to trust you with it, to let go of control and understand that it's there we get to experience your grace. You give us what we don't need, or you give us what we need, what we don't deserve. And it's from that place that we can practice courage. So would you help us to apply that to our lives this week? And would it change our families? Would it change our relationships? Would it change how we approach work? Jesus, courage changed the world. And that's what we're asking you to do in our lives. Man, we love you. And it's in your name we pray, Jesus. Amen.